We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We are 27 years into doing this purple therapy thing that we do on mornings after when things go wrong in places like Buffalo. Remember when things went wrong in Buffalo when Kyle Bowler was there and I was displeased about it. But of course, I had a 6 a.m. flight out of Western New York to get home. Luke Jones is going to join me in this one. Just want to remind everybody we're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour beginning next Tuesday at the Beaumont in Catonsville. They have a delicious crab cake. They have an unbelievable fried lobster tail. My wife's all about the lamb chops there, so I will get the lamb chops. We're going to be joined by Pat Young, councilman running for Baltimore County Executive. Also going to be joined by my pal, Chad Koz. And I don't know what else we're doing because I'm doing more crab cake tours. I worked more in August than I think I've worked in any other month since my wife was ill 11 years ago. We made the switch just with political pieces, with local pieces, with people I love and people on both sides of the political fence with what's going on in this country, getting ready for football, going to Buffalo, having legends on like John McClain last week, still talking about the Orioles, still talking about the Orioles because Alan McCallum and I did an hour on Sunday morning after Saturday night, and Luke and I are worn out from this fiasco in Buffalo, so much that we haven't even discussed. Something magic happens, Jackson Holiday, and celebrate. So anyway, Luke, they pissed away a football game on Sunday night. This is my nice way of banding about and promoting Curio Wellness. And here's what I'm going to do to promote for you, because I got to ask you this, most important, because we're going to get into the defense and we're going to talk about them losing. We're talking about Joe Flacco coming to town and all that. Have you ever had a proper piece of peach cake? Can I ask you? I need to know on behalf of Curio Wellness and my tastiness tour. This we're winding down the Maryland Crab Cake Tour's began all the oyster, the beer, all that. This has been my favorite one. And I even said to my wife this week, she's like, "Hey, you're home. We're gonna make dinner. What are we gonna do?" And I'm like, "Anything you want. I've eaten everything. If I die this week, I've had peach cake. I've had Amici's meatballs. I've had broccoli tempura from Ekibin. All of my favorite things. Then you know how much I like to eat for a skinny guy. You've spent a lot of time with me in a lot of places. Tell everybody the first thing we do when we go anywhere. We eat, man."
Yeah, we eat, and to answer your question, I don't think I have because I would remember if I've had peach cake, I don't remember it, so
You better hurry, man.
it clearly wasn't proper then, right? So,
You know what's
but
weird? Your love affair with your father and my love affair with my father and our mutual love affairs with sports and each other and the Ravens and the Colts and just all of this. I found old Skipjack stuff the other day, rummaging through the antique shop, the Bowery antique shop that went out of business Saturday, and actually held a card of Earl the Big Cat Williams on the day that Davy Johnson died. Like crazy stuff happened to me over the weekend. But like the fact that you haven't had peach cake and the fact that we are very, very late in the peach cake game, my dude. So, like, you better hurry up and get yourself over there to wherever it is you get peach cake. I would tell you that I'm a little partial to Al and my friends at Fenwick Bakery. So, I just want to give some love to them. This is the peach cake. I'm going to eat this to. In the old days when we would do purple therapy here with Swami and Spiro, and I mean, you. Drew, Glenn, whoever did morning radio here, after a loss like this, we'd have to do something. And Nick DeGreek, oftentimes back in the day, would bring by donuts, and there'd be a lot of donuts here. There was an old John Belushi bit, Saturday Night Live. He said, "I ate a lot of donuts that day." So I ate a lot of those. So I'm going to eat peach cake, and I'm going to have you explain to us and them and me and everyone what the hell went wrong. And I know we want to talk about the. See, at least I got you laughing, man. I mean, because like there was nothing to laugh about Sunday night, dude. It was th th this. We're gonna taste this one for a long time.
There was plenty to laugh about until the final 5 minutes of the game, right? I
Yeah.
mean, it's amazing. I just saw this, as you and I are breaking this down hours later, and we'll
Over
continue.
peach cake, if you're lucky.
We'll continue to talk about this because this narrative is going to continue, right? A win over the Browns is not going to do it. I mean, I suppose if they go to Kansas City and win in a couple weeks, maybe that'll feel different, but man, it's tough. And I just saw this. I mean, this is directly from the NFL Plus Twitter account. The Ravens are the first team in NFL history to score 40 plus points and rush for 235 plus yards in a loss. Teams were previously 277 and 0, including the playoffs. I mean,
Stink, stank, stunk.
that right there will tell you your defense had a bad night. I mean, the captain obvious statement. And it's funny because I've alluded to this in some of our other segments that I'm sure some of our listeners have heard, as they're trying to stomach the therapy of a
Go get
41-40
some
loss.
peach cake, man. It'll make you feel better, please.
Peach cake or some Pizza John's on Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever.
This is so delicious, dude. I can't begin to tell you how.
But it's I think it's funny how I felt about the defensive performance when you were t when the when it was 40-25. Don't get me wrong, I wasn't about to sit here and say that the defense played well and there wasn't anything to clean up, there wasn't anything to worry about. But I was being realistic, right? I mean, the idea that you didn't tackle anyone all summer, right? And we know that's part of the reality of the NFL in 2025. Very few teams play their starters. So you didn't tackle anyone to the ground. And when you're going up against Josh Allen and James Cook, who, didn't have a great night on Sunday night, but is still a very capable back that Buffalo just paid a couple weeks ago, I wasn't expecting it to be a perfect performance. I certainly expected them to give up some points and give up some drives. Josh Allen's the reigning MVP for a reason, right? You're not expecting the Ravens to hold them to 3 points or 10 points or 13 points or 17 points. I expected a lower scoring game in general. I think I picked 23-20 Ravens because I thought these offenses would look a little bit more like what you saw around the league, which was not very good overall, because teams are just choppy and out of sync and they're not timed up the way that these operations are come week six, week seven, and so on. But man, you talk about the fourth quarter, you give up 22 points. Josh Allen threw for, what was it, 251 yards in the fourth quarter alone. That can't happen. I mean, that is so far below the bar of what a Ravens defense is supposed to be. Ray Lewis crashed the Football Night in America pregame show. I don't know how many people were watching it, but it was in the middle of Jack Collinsworth and I guess it was Rodney Harrison, and Ray Lewis just crashed the set and was talking about. Let's talk about the Ravens in general, but certainly talking about the defense. And I think back to the spring when Marlon Humphrey made the comments about this defense not being feared the way that it used to in recent years, which I think is completely true. Even though, they had some really good defenses with Mike McDonald and Wink Martindale certainly had its moments. It's not like the defense has been all bad by any stretch of the imagination, far from it. But to finish that game the way they did, and I think you look at the secondary. Buffalo didn't. The running numbers weren't great. I mean, they popped a couple runs on the outside with some lateral misdirection, things like that. But between the tackles, they didn't do a whole lot. So I can't sit here and say that the run defense was terrible because it wasn't. But I mean, when you're that bad in the fourth quarter, and I'll hear that. They were on the field a lot. The Ravens went. The Ravens' last couple touchdown, like they scored quick, right? I mean, they were scoring quickly. You look at the time of possession in the second half; it was very heavily slanted in Buffalo's favor. So, I'll hear the fatigue factor. I'll hear some of that, but I mean, couldn't stop them. Those last few drives. I mean, that's pathetic. You need your defense to be better than that. I mean, especially all the hype. Right? Five first round picks in the secondary and all Pro Bowl talent at every level. They didn't get a lot of pressure on Josh Allen. And I get it. Some of that is by design that you're doing some of the caged in rushing where you're trying to keep him in the pocket. You're trying to prevent him from getting out and scrambling. So I'll hear that. I understand that's not going to be a game where you're going to register seven sacks and 15 quarterback hits, most likely. But you look at the final results and what, one sack? He was hit a few times. I mean, it just wasn't good enough. It was so far below the bar. And it felt very Very much
That
like
was an
last year.
MVP effort, by the way.
Oh,
Just as
it
much as
was,
we
and
talked about that Lamar getting screwed and this and that, and I talked to all the Buffalo guys last week. You can find it at Baltimore Positive about who voted which way and why and how and what weapons he has versus the weapons that Lamar has and the potentiality of the offense, and the overall presentation of how important Josh Allen. I said to my wife when I summoned her back in and said, they're going to lose. Like, I'm like, you better wake back. You better wake up and get back in here. I mean, literally, she came running back in.
yeah.
She said, I wasn't asleep anyway. And then she sat here and watched the whole thing. I'm watching him sling. And I said to her, they're going to lose. I said, he looks like John effing. And I used the real freaking word. I said, he looks like John Elway. He looks like Joe Montana. It just looks like he's got all the confidence in the world at the end of one of these games. And you know who doesn't have that, so much of that experience is Lamar. Lamar doesn't have that. Lamar's won a couple of games from behind Cleveland. We remember these exciting wins where we embarrass them at the end of a
Right.
game. But the way this thing's been structured for a decade, they're so good. I have a lot more experience with them winning 41-3 in Los Angeles late night and just dancing around and wearing sunglasses and pulling starters and seeing Snoop Huntley than I do with them having to make a kind of comeback and having to run a tempo late and having to make play after play after play in order to win a game because they've effed the game up so badly. And Buffalo kind of was on the edge of that, right? Like Buffalo looked like they quit in the third quarter on offense. I mean, a wide receiver standing there watching, watching defenders catch balls in front of them. I'm watching and I'm like, oh my God, they look like they want to get on the bus and they live there. And that was in the third quarter. And how much it changed and how much defense and tackling can be right all day till it's not right. And one play will get you beat. Like I was watching the Steelers go down the field early in the game on Sunday. And actually, not Steelers, the Bengals, and they were doing a pretty good job. The Browns were doing a pretty good job against Joe Burrow, like sacked him, Myles Garrett. Things were happening. They were like standing up, fighting. Flacco had, punched back with a drive, and it was early in the game. And I saw a ball go over the head, and it was just sort of like, how do you let that happen against Joe Burrow? Like there was a play, and I'm like, man, the Browns defensive coordinator must be pissed about, and I'm like, oh, it's Jim Schwartz. I look, and next thing I knew, I saw Schwartz, and I'm like, that it can be perfect on every play until it's not perfect, or until you start to leak and you start to and you're tired and it's late and you're on your heels and the crowd's down on you. And Josh Allen is 6'5 and 250 pounds and will try to run you over. He's unbelievable, man. I mean, like, I watched that and I'm talking about John Elway and I'm talking about the greatest quarterbacks that I've ever seen do it late in the game that just sort of dissected and went down the field a little bit. That was impressive. I mean, and again, Elway used to do it with Steve Watson and, Randy, Mr. Randy Watson. It didn't matter who Elway had with him. He would, same thing with Brett Favre. It didn't matter kind of who it was that you could go do it. I won't know that the Buffalo Bills are exercised until they're exercised. And now if the Ravens go back out up there on a cold, icy night or wherever they're going to go in January and what they're going to have to do, witnessing that on Sunday night is its own poison. It was like watching Elway do the drive early in his career and saying he's got that capability. Not that Lamar doesn't, but Josh Allen should scare everyone. He really should.
Yeah, and I honestly, I really don't even want to make it about Allen versus Lamar. I mean, this is about the Ravens defense being lousy, terrible in the fourth quarter. I mean, that was
And
awful.
Josh Allen being very good.
And he's great, no question. No question. In the same way that Lamar has made a lot of defenses look really lousy over the years, too. I mean, really, look, let me be clear. Mahomes is the standard of this current era, right? The Super Bowl rings support that. He's done it for a longer period of time being at the top, right? I mean, he was putting up MVP numbers before, when Lamar and Josh Allen were still rookies, right? I mean, that's, when Mahomes took over for Alex Smith in year two of his career, he's been at that level since then. But the last couple years, when we're taking into account the regular season and the full body of work, Allen and Lamar, in whichever order you want to put them, they've been 1-2. I mean, the last 2 years, they've been 1-2. I mean, they've been that special. Mahomes has risen to the occasion in January. Kansas City has risen to the occasion in January, but no one would look at what they've looked like in the regular season and not put Allen and Lamar over Mahomes the last couple of years in the regular season. Okay. So that being said, when you look at what happened in that game, I mean, this Ravens secondary, it was very soft, in terms of the coverage. I've already mentioned it. I'll mention it again. I mean, that last drive, they've zeroed in on Jaire Alexander and said, we're going after this guy. Give them credit. I mean, Keon Coleman made some plays, right? I mean, Cook had the 51-yard, the long catch and run, right? I mean, where the tackling was poor. So it wasn't just the secondary. I mean, they had breakdowns there, but and you made mention of this out how it can just be one play. And obviously the defense didn't have a great night from start to finish. It wasn't great by any means, but the first 50 minutes of that game, it was good enough, acknowledging exactly what you said, that Josh Allen's great and he's the reigning MVP and they're going to get their plays and they're going to score points, right? You're not going to shut them down. This isn't 2000 with the 2000 Ravens going up against some sickly offense with a corpse of a quarterback or anything like that. You're going up against a very vibrant, dangerous, high-scoring offense. You're going to give up points. I mean, it's the reality. In the same way that 15 years ago we were talking about, you would talk about the Patriots and you'd say, well, the goal here is hold them to 23. If they get to 30, they get to 28, it's probably not going to
Yeah, once
go
you get
well.
to 40 and they're at 25 and there's 4 minutes left to
You're
go in the
liking the
game, you like to
like
think
your
you'd win.
chances. Yeah. But because you'd like to think that at the very least, okay, that's not to say that they're not going to score again, but you
By the way, did you
can.
see that gambling stat? I mean, and I can't follow all the gamble. I mean, the gambling thing is like it's like following your fantasy team. Like it's just not where I
Yeah.
am. I'm not reaching into my pocket or onto my app. Bad, 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 bad. I was like Fred Flintstone, right? And I'm a lottery guy, and I'm fine with betting, and I'm like, but it is a little over the top. But the numbers become interesting to me when they say that the Bills had a 1.1% chance to win with 8 minutes, whatever these things are, and the Ravens have had more beats when they've been a 99 percentile winner than any team in the history of this or that or whatever in the last 7 years. It's like, that's how weird this thing is. I even think from a gambling perspective that this double digit comeback beat thing, Luke, it's almost as uncanny as their preseason record.
I don't know what to do with that because I wasn't expecting you to mention the preseason. But look, and I'm not a gambling guy either, but if you bet on the Ravens every week, you're way more ahead than you're behind, right? Because of all these boat race wins and how good they are against the spread overall and all that.
But I
But
think part of the gambling Jones for the people who do it poorly is probably when you look at a game like this and say, can they come back? And I can get 80 to 1 right now. I'll put 10 bucks on it right now over the next 10 minutes that they can come back. That all of that inducement to wager is there. And that's why those numbers are there and saying that currently the Bills have a 1.3% chance to win this football game. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? With 8 minutes left to go in a game. I mean, that's. Well, and you're the math nerd about baseball. You're the Saber guy, doing all that. The breakdowns on how uncanny these beats are, it is, if if my old gambling guy was around here with the beard, he'd be telling you, you got pocket aces and your probabilities to win, and what it's going to take the royal flush to beat you, on the river. What card can be in the deck to beat you? Man, when you're up two touchdowns with a couple minutes left to go, and you keep losing these games,
Yeah.
it brings to question coaching, and it brings to question, like, who do you have on the field? Who are you employing here? What are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, it brings into question just the DNA of it all. And it's tough to, you don't want to tear it down entirely because incredibly talented and very good, and you see what they do for 50 minutes, but like, goodness, you got to finish. And just to finish my thought about, if you're someone who bets on the Ravens every week, you're way more ahead than behind. But man, when it's a bad beat, it is, and it's funny you mentioned poker because I was thinking the same thing. It's like these are the kind of beats where there's literally one card that can come on the river that can beat you, and it just happens, and it happens, and it happens. And look, I don't want to say that to
And
imply
you
that the
leave the casino when
I don't want to say
that
that to imply that the Ravens have just been unlucky, but that touchdown catch that they did have off the deflection on fourth down, that there was an unlucky element to that. But
Well, the
then,
kicker doinked, you
yeah.
know? I mean, like the ball could have gone through. I mean,
It's just, gosh, it's so. I'm someone that tries to be as analytical as I can be. I love numbers. I'm a nerd. I'm a baseball nerd. I look at win probability and different things like that. I mean, I try to always contextualize things. And some of what I would say here was, the Ravens, like I said, when they do lose games, it's like this. It's not like they go out there and they lay an egg and, they lose by two touchdowns or three touchdowns. I mean, they don't have games like that. And not to say that Buffalo has a ton either, or Kansas City has a ton either, but the Ravens did it to Buffalo in week four last year, right? I mean, so, but it's just, how does this keep happening? And that's where you just look at everything. It's, and the Ravens, they made such a point this summer talking about this internal grading system that they did with their practices and trying to be more intentional and more deliberate. And right off the bat, I mean, it's just the same old story. Right off the bat, it's the same old, well, you
I
guys
would
haven't
tell it's
learned your
ugly in the
lesson.
building this week, right? Like, I mean,
It
I
has to be.
like what?
Has to be.
I mean, I saw the look, the shock and awe on Harbaugh's face, and I do want to apologize to everyone in my audience that Chad Steele has disallowed people like for me from going and asking questions because that's really what happened. I took on a former intern of mine around here in the aftermath of the game about like I'm here getting insulted by you after being disallowed to ask questions on behalf of a sleazy, sleazy franchise that had a sleazy kicker doing sleazy things. And by the way, the words Justin and Tucker were never mentioned in the broadcast on Sunday night either. I don't know where Mike Green was. I don't know where Ben Cleveland was. But I'm going to go on and on. I'm going to write a columnist about that this week, just in a general sense. But like accountability for all of this and what's going to be done about it and how it gets buckled up. This is really where it's hard, dude, because you and I have gone 8 months now since the last meltdown, since Mark Andrews dropped the ball twice and then couldn't even show up at the podium to answer questions, but has plenty of commercial time here in the office. Like, it's just an accountability issue through that begins with Chad Steele and Steve Bisciotti, who is not accountable anymore. Sashi Brown, who's never had a real press conference, never met anyone, is a silent man in all of this. That it bleeds down to the head coach is on the line for all of this. He's unfireable. They just gave him 3 more years, right? Like, they were crowing about that back in May, right? So, like, it is what it is, and the expectation is the expectation. And I know one thing, they can't beat Buffalo next week, and they can't beat Buffalo the next week, and but they can beat Kansas City and they can beat Cleveland, but they can't do anything until January comes and they stack 3 of these. And I don't mean 3 of what Sunday night. I mean 3 of these like you go win. And when you lose in Buffalo, generally you have to go to Buffalo. Like and that's why even early in the game, Chris Collinsworth had a couple of moments early where he's just like, oh man, it's a big game. Oh man. He's thinking like a wide receiver again. Yeah, playing week one against the most important team in the conference and knowing like it's a big game. It's a big game. It's a big game. And when you lose it, oh my God, it's a much bigger game. And you and I spent 8 months now, 4 months since the schedule came out, talking about like what it would feel like if somehow they lost by a point because their kicker doinked an extra point and their defense blew a 15-point lead. And running for 300 yards wasn't enough for Derrick Henry. I mean, like, I feel like Rod Serling's going to show up here in some sort of Twilight Zone thing because there is no accountability. There aren't real press conferences. There aren't real reasons. And no matter what, They can't do or prove anything until they now have to go back to Buffalo in January and do it all over again and relive this all again and have it all play again on the NFL Network and do all the press conferences and have Lamar say, "I'm pissed, I'm pissed," and have Josh Allen say, "Well, we got him last time, but I still can't beat Mahomes, and we haven't won the Super Bowl around here." And dude, that place is going to be, you thought it was messy on Sunday night? Wait, you see it when it's icy and it's January 23rd or whatever it's going to be, and you have to go back up there because of what happened between 11:10 and 11:40 on Sunday night.
I mean,
There, I finally got angry, okay? You and I have been
yeah.
at this 3 hours on a Monday morning, and I'm finally, but my column's going to be angry all the way around, just all of it, all of it, all of it.
I can tell. And look, I'm not going to sit here and argue with those points because I mean, it's a very frustrating outcome. I mean, to state the obvious, there's such a sense of why in the world does this keep happening to this degree? Because, a lot of what you just meant, and look, I'll hear you about Mark Andrews not talking to, like, I don't think fans care that much about
I care
that
about
part of it.
accountability
No,
because
I
I'm a
understand.
journalist,
I
and it's our
understand.
job to ask them questions,
I
not to be locked
understand.
out, not to be intimidated, not to be told there's no press box room after you break stories that embarrass them, not to be told if you continue to break stories that are truthful, that embarrass us, that are about literally stalking women in our community, serially. A 10-game suspension when a guy that was assaulting people got a 6-game suspension? Like, they should have to answer for this, whether they win or lose. But when they lose, I'm going to damn well make sure when I'm locked out, I don't want to be in Buffalo this morning catching a flight. But all that being said, somebody should be there asking. I mean, their stream went out on their post-game press conference. That's how unaccountable they are. Like, I just keep going back to, do they have character? Do they have integrity? Do they have all of that? And when it shows up and it's time to perform, whether that is acts of accountability or making a spectacular play or not making a spectacular play or failing on a very unspectacular play, the ability to show up and say, "I'm here, I'll stand in front of it, I'll stand behind it." They're not an organization that does that. And that begins with the owner and the coach and the lies and the thuggery of how we're the Ravens and you're not. And all of that's great when you're winning Super Bowls. They're not winning Super Bowls right now. They're not winning big games. Their leadership is being questioned. Their coach went and played footsie with the guy who the next day went and met with Putin. Good work, John. Good work. Dictator. Good work. And then doesn't want to have questions about it. And then media that ask questions about it get intimidated by them for asking questions. So you're a part of it. You're on the inside. You get to ask the questions, and I don't like the answers they give you most of the time or the tone with which they give it. And I'll say that. So when they get their ass beat like they did on Sunday night, they got a lot of splaining to do, as Ricky and Lucy would say. And they're not going to be here to explain it. But I mean, look, I watched the post game at 2 in the morning with Jerry Sandusky. And Jerry Sandusky's on the field. And he said, even the podcasters and the pundits and the barstools and the things, and they'll all be talking. Yeah, everybody in the country watched them melt down in a football game after melting down in a football game in the same place at the same time. They have all the Super Bowl potential. They have the head coaches going to the Hall of This and his brother. And and Henry's going to the Hall of Fame. But dude, when Hopkins caught that ball, I said to my wife, I'm like, oh my God, he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, just like unbelievable skill that they have on the field. And yet they lost again, and the kicker doinked the kick, and the defense backed up, and the offense couldn't get it done, and their Hall of Fame running back fumbled the ball. I mean, it wasn't good. And what would make this worse is the day after it happens in January, whether it happens in Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Buffalo, LA, pick your poison, Kansas City, it could be anywhere, right? They have to go and win these games in January. And you know what, Luke? There's nothing I saw on Sunday night late that gives me the confidence that choke isn't a way of life for them at this point because it's getting to be there for them. And if that's me being a jerk Monday morning, fine. I'm a jerk that spent millions of dollars chasing them around the world, supporting their franchise, supporting their brand, defending their brand in Ray Lewis, defending their brand in Ray Rice, till I saw the glass elevator and saw what frauds they all were in the aftermath and have been that you and I weren't there to ask questions after a loss like this on Sunday night. So all of that being said, Stephen A. Smith can have his piece today and all of that. My piece is, this better not happen in January, and it better be a dry dress rehearsal for what, as a Led Zeppelin song would say, what is and what should never be.
I mean, it's the same old Ravens. I mean, that if I'm watching that game as a fan of any of the 30 other teams. Now, let me also be very clear about this, and this is where I'll push back a little bit at some of what you're saying, just from the standpoint of if it was truly so fundamentally flawed, they wouldn't be in the position to win as much as they do, right? But for whatever reason, something in their DNA, something that lost in the details. Players on the field, coaches on the sideline, whatever, right? Yes, right?
Yeah,
Because,
you don't want to get ahead in history as being the best team to ever play that never won.
and that,
Ask Dan
but that's the
Marino.
thing, you know, like I just said, anyone who's not a Ravens fan, well, and not, let me not even say that because Ravens fans are saying the same thing. They're all looking at this and they're saying, gosh, they did it again. It's the same old Ravens.
They
They're like,
beat themselves.
now, granted, fans of a lot of teams, they'll say that, and then they'll look at their roster and say, we don't have any shot against those guys, though, because we're talking about a very, you know, and I'm not talking about like the Raiders beating them in week two last year, right? Because Raiders haven't won jack in a long time, right? But in terms of talking like Kansas City, Buffalo reflecting on what happened Sunday night, you know, even go as far as the NFC, Philadelphia, right? I mean, the Eagles came into Baltimore in early December last year, and you know, it wasn't like a collapse by the Ravens. I mean, and I would even say this. I mean, the game that they lost in Buffalo last year, it's not like they blew a 15-point lead in that game, but it's still just critical mistakes at the end. When you've got a chance to win, those win probability plays, you know, those big swings, when you've got a chance, those are the plays where the Ravens shoot themselves in the foot or give up a big play. Or just they come up smaller than the other team. And that's just, you know, some of what you mentioned with the accountability and asking questions. They don't know. If they knew, this wouldn't keep happening, right? I mean, they don't know why this keeps happening. It's kind of like talking about like the Red Sox, right? With the curse for 86 years.
Well, it's not any one thing. It's a series of things that we
Correct.
talk about that begin with Trenton Simpson hitting the line, kicker missing the extra point, Derrick Henry fumbling,
Yes.
just, you know,
Yes.
and that's just at the end of the game. If you're going to judge each one of those things, not things that happened earlier in the game when you drop interceptions and stuff, you know?
Sure. And again, there were 30 plays that you could point to over the course of that game for either side that were something where you say, hey, I'm putting a star on that. That seems kind of a big deal, right? I mean, Buffalo, think about it. I mean, they missed multiple 2-point conversions where
I stepped out of bounds and caught the
You know,
ball, right?
but you can do the hindsight thing and say, well, if we had just kicked the regular extra point all along, right? If we had not done the analytics thing. So, and obviously you can always do those things. And I think there's a place for some of that discussion, but I think a lot of times it ends up being noise. But when this just keeps happening like this,
Well, think about the
they don't
kicker who
know.
misses the extra point and they lose by a point. Like, that's not good on his psyche
It's
this
not.
week. It's not. I mean, this, if that were the only thing that went wrong, we'd be talking more about Justin Tucker, which we probably should be doing. We should have been talking a lot more about Justin Tucker all along, in regard to the integrity of this franchise, which I will continue to bring up just in a general sense because I know the sleaze of the franchise and how they like to bury it all, but we would be talking about the kicker in some major way here today if we weren't talking about how did Derrick Henry fumble after looking like a Hall of Famer all night, or we can't really pick on Lamar because Lamar was kind of almost perfect in the game, right? Like, so I don't. But the defense, and it's not any one person, not any one college, not any one ball that went over anybody's head. It was an ensemble effort of where's Chuck Pagano and Zach Orr answering you? I mean, we've talked for hours now, you and I, and I've just said Pagano and Orr's names for the first time in a while. And Roquan Smith, and as much as I talked for weeks here about are we feeling older or younger? Ronnie Stanley felt a little spry and getting out in his game a little bit. I don't know. Marlon Humphrey and Roquan Smith and the defense in general. Matabike made a play or two. The big money guys I'm talking about showing up.
I thought Hamilton played really well.
But there was more Wiggins. There was more Starks dropping the interception. There's more young, more of the younger players involved. Your first round picks, guys that were waiting and saying, hey, you're going to be another Hamilton, or are you going to be an Ed Reed, or are you going to be a, I don't know, pick the role guy. I mean, I you know, pick the wrong guy.
Just to go back to Loop for a second. Let's also point out he hit a 52-yard field goal on their first drive where they had a third and two play from the 14-yard line. So, yeah, he missed an extra point, but he converted a long field goal when their offense self-destructed on back-to-back plays to turn what would have been a chip shot into a long field goal.
It was more tuckery, right?
But I just want, in the interest of fairness, and this is why I said, like, it's tough to just put it on one thing because you can go back and look at, okay, that didn't go well, but. Well, look what he did there. Loop made another long field goal late in the first half when a similar situation, right? Where he ended up hitting from what, 49 yards? They had the ball at the 17-yard line before the Justice Hill fumble that cost them what, 15 yards or whatever, or what, 8 yards, 10 yards, whatever it was. So you can point to lots of different things. I mean, the special teams up until Loop missing the extra point, and he had the kickoff play, which I think you're going to see a lot of that around the league, with the touchback now moving to the 35 on kicking to the end zone. I think you're going to, a lot of these teams are trying to figure out, how do I pooch it inside the landing zone, all that. So you're going to see some of that. But I mean, look at the opening kickoff of the game. I mean, they let Buffalo start the game at midfield. You can't do that. There's a situation where the defense gave up a touchdown, but it's like they started on the 50-yard line. You can't have that. So it was a bad night for the special teams beyond just talking about Loop with the missed extra point, right? And Trenton Simpson, it was bad beyond those couple plays that really were magnified. But yeah, I mean, it's again, I look at the defense, and if you had asked me with 10 minutes to go how the defense played, I'd say they certainly have a lot they need to clean up, and certainly would not sit here and say that was a great performance by any stretch of the imagination. But you're kind of looking at it and you're
On the road
saying,
against Josh Allen.
right,
Okay.
exactly. I understand. Like 25, like 40 to 25. Like if the score, let's say the score ended there, I would have said, yeah, the defense, they did get some stops, and they did. They settled in after the choppy
I
start.
would have said at that point, I need to see a little more pass rush.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the pass rush wasn't great. Coverage was, not terrible, but not elite. They're high expectations, right? Everyone wanted to do was hype up this secondary in the summer. And I'm guilty of some of that. Although I pointed out a lot about Jaire Alexander saying, look, this guy's missed a heck of a lot of football the last few years. And the fact that he sat out the last 3 weeks of the preseason managing that knee, I get it. I understand it from a physical standpoint. But at some point, you know what? You got to go out there and play football too. And that's where you look at that and say, you're hoping that was more the product of him just missing 3 weeks of practice and not the fear that that's what he is now, right? Because, man, they went right after him on that last drive. And you know what? I don't know if we've even mentioned, I may have mentioned it in one of our other segments just in passing, but how about how it worked out, how he tripped up the receiver there rather than if he goes in the end zone and scores that touchdown there, the Ravens get the ball back and they've got all their timeouts. It's a great chance that they're going to win that football game if they let Buffalo score there. Now, maybe he goes down at the 1 yard line, right? Teams that have the greatest awareness go over those scenarios. But we also know that when you're in the thick of it and bullets are
And
flying
you see the end zone.
and something unexpected happens, it's a little bit different. Sometimes guys
I
can't do
wonder if
that.
that was mentioned in the huddle, if you get a chance to go. Because, I mean, at that point, it's let's just friggin' score. We're losing.
Sure. Well, and you look and keep in mind that was a 25-yard play. I mean, they were at the 34-yard line on that play. You know, that pass to Coleman
But I
that.
wonder if Allen says in that they don't go in the end zone. You don't score. We can't score here. If you get close,
And
get
that's what
down,
I'm
go
wondering.
down, go down.
And that's what I'm
I
wondering. And
wonder if that was coached in or not. I
but the
bet it
point,
wasn't. I bet it wasn't.
it may not have been, but it's certainly the fact that Alexander tripped him up there, that ended up actually working to Buffalo's
Oh my God,
benefit.
it bled the clock.
So,
Yeah.
again, there's another example of, like, who knows what was the situation. You know, it's easier said than done, right? I mean, you're at the 34. You're not thinking, you know, if you're at the 10-yard line, the 15-yard line, I think those conversations in the huddle and the coordinator talking to the quarterback or the coordinator talking to the inside linebacker making the calls in the huddle, maybe that comes up a little bit, or not maybe, it definitely comes up in those scenarios. But you know, that was a third a 25-yard completion. But there's just another play. I mean, we tend to focus on the absolute biggest plays, and obviously for the Ravens, I think the Henry fumble really stands out above it all. I think, you know, and certainly there were others, but man, there were just like 30 plays in this game, one side or the other, that were just, you know, kind of felt like you started at the time, but then you look back and it's like, holy cow, that was massive to how this game finished. But the defense, I mean, just that was so far below the bar of what Ravens defense is. We know that, and they've got to get a lot better. I think they will. I think they will get better. I don't think this defense is bad just because of one performance, but they've got work to do. And you certainly hope they make the adjustments more quickly than they did last year, right? Where, you know, okay, they found their stride post bye last year, but that cost them the number one seed, right? And you already talked about it. I mean, let's be clear. I don't want to sit here and say that the number one seed is over, because it's not. But and I'll get a little nerdy here for
These
you, because
next 5 or 6 weeks now become a little more hot late.
it does. But Aaron Schatz, you know, a friend of the program that we've had on
But
many
my
times.
point is, you don't be 3-3 thinking you're going to be a one seed.
Oh, right, of course
You
not.
know what I'm
Especially,
saying? Like that's absurd. Yeah.
and I touched on this. You know, we talked about this in a previous conversation. But Buffalo's schedule now, until their bye in week 7, at the Jets. All right, hey, the Jets. The Jets offense actually looked representative, right? I mean, but at the Jets, home against Miami, who might have been the worst team of anyone in week 1. Miami looked awful. Home against New Orleans, Saints. The one way that you could point to the Saints as having a redeeming quality was what? Hey, they've got good uniforms, and then you see what they wore on Sunday on top of just being a bad team. Home against New England, at Atlanta. I mean, that's their next 5 games. You tell me what game's a loss there. Now, it's the NFL, and who knows? Division opponents, you never know.
But if
Maybe
they're 6-0
they
and
might
you're
be
three
six
and
and oh.
three, then
Well, even if you're not 3-3, even if you win 4 of the next 5 and you're 4-2,
you
that's
win 4 of the next 5. It means you've beaten Kansas City. It means you've beaten Houston. It means you've won conference games, right?
but if Buffalo's 6-0, you're 2 down with a tiebreaker in the Bills' pocket. So it speaks, but I just wanted to share this. This is where the math is. And look, I know a lot of people will call phooey on this, and I hear that, right? And it's in a vacuum, but it's math. You're running predictive models.
Hey, the predictive model was the Ravens were 99% to win with 8 minutes left to go in the game Sunday night.
This going into Sunday night's game, this is how important that game was regarded in terms of Super Bowl probability, in terms of the number one seed, all of that. FTN, which is Aaron Schatz, you know, it's not Football Outsiders anymore. Their simulations had the Bills winning the Super Bowl 18.6% of the time with a win on Sunday night, 12% with a loss. Simulations had the Ravens winning the Super Bowl 24.5% of the time with a win on Sunday night, 16.8% with a loss. That just shows you. And look, I'd still. You ask me right now, can I have the Ravens and the Bills to win the Super Bowl or the field? I'm still going to take the field because it's the NFL and things are nuts and injuries are a real thing, right? But that right there, that math there, which I know, again, it's in a vacuum, but it's just an exercise just to show how important the number one seed is and how pivotal Sunday night's game was in terms of talking about that. Now, Josh Allen goes out there and someone breaks his leg in week five, Bill's season's over. Same thing happens to the Ravens if something happens to Lamar. Season's over in terms of Super Bowl and anything meaningful. So we know that. But in terms of just all the information you have right now, that's how critical week one was in terms of the number one seed and home field advantage. And when you had a 15-point lead late in the fourth quarter, and that happens to you,
Again
boy, again, boy,
and again and
that.
again and again.
And you know, that's not even getting into the psychological scarring, right? The scar tissue that this team has going back to 2019, you know, when they.
Dude, I stood in Marlon Humphrey's locker and he looked like he was in the mod squad with his sunglasses on and his fro out. And he said, "We choked, we choked." And that was when they lost to the
Six years ago.
Chargers. Yeah,
Six
I mean,
years.
you know, like they haven't stood there and won a game like that in a long time. They have won games on Thanksgiving night. They've won games at home. They finally beat Kansas City. You know, they've marched up and down. They boat race teams from the NFC specifically. They've done some ass kicking of NFC teams over the course of time.
Sure.
But, you know, I also you mentioned that Eagles game last year. I thought the Eagles kind of outclassed them. I mean, that was the one team that I thought they're better than them. And if they see them again, you know, they might not beat them straight up. I never thought that they couldn't beat the Chiefs or they couldn't beat the Bills. I do think that they have character flaws on this team. And I'll, you know, like I just, it is where it is. And I'll continue to think there's a reason this operation keeps losing games like this in some uncanny way. And it's not what Peter Angelos called that black cat out there. That black cat, we're bad luck. You know, you make your own luck, man. You make your
Yeah.
kicks, make your plays. You know, alignment, assignment, technique, penalties, hold on to the ball,
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know
finish
if
the game.
I don't know if I personally would describe it as character as much as it's just there is a they have a quality that when things go sideways late and they're in one of these games, gosh, it just everyone goes down with the ship. I mean, it's just they just it's a meltdown. It's there's this nervous energy that just like it just falls on everybody, right? And you just they can't
Well, if you
reverse
talk
it.
about choking, you might.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and that's the part that, look, let me be clear. Sunday night was not a revenge game. A week one win is not revenge for losing in the divisional round. It's just not. I'm sorry, it's not. And I would have absolutely rejected that notion. That said, gosh, you were already carrying that January loss with you all off season. This was your first opportunity to wipe the slate clean as much as you can in the context of understanding you're going into week two. There's still 4 months to go until the playoffs, right? I mean, we all understand that. But now you've got this on top of that. And I'll say this much, and we'll get into Cleveland here over the next few days. You better not let this linger in the back of your mind. Look, the Browns, I think, are going to be a pretty bad team. News flash. Wow, big shock there. I'm predicting the
You better
Cleveland
make
Browns,
sure they're a bad team and beat them this week.
but their defense has shown an ability at times over the last few years. Not every performance, because the Ravens have had some games where they've scored a lot against them, but they've had some games where they haven't. And if you come into this one and you're kind of sleepwalking and feeling sorry for
Kicking field
yourself
goals.
and you know, you miss a kick, you turn the ball over early on, someone falls down in coverage. Joe Flacco still has a big arm, right? I mean, he's not an elite quarterback at this stage of his career, far from it. But at the same time, if you bust the coverage or you know, you're not real fine on your P's and Q's with how you're playing your defense, they could still score some points against you, at least enough.
I would encourage
And
anybody that didn't see the game, go back and watch Flacco's interceptions that weren't really even interceptions. So,
I mean, I would just say it's this simple. I mean, the formula is very simple here. The Raiders came into Baltimore in week two last year, and the Ravens found a way to lose that game, coming off of a disappointing loss in Kansas City, where Kansas City, they didn't blow a big lead. You know, that was a back and forth game, and they had their chances, and Isaiah Likely's toe was on the line, right? That wasn't a choke. That wasn't a choke loss. This was. So, man, you can't feel sorry for yourself. because you've got to play against a division opponent who is a big underdog. I saw the Ravens already seeing the early lines for week two, as you would expect, are going to be the heaviest favorite of the week. And I think that's fair, even after Sunday night's debacle. I would still say that's fair. But man, you need to go out and take care of business because, to your point a few minutes ago, you got Detroit the following week. And I get it. The Lions, man, the Lions look bad on Sunday. Green Bay, talk about eating their lunch. I mean, Green Bay stole their lunch money. They punked them. But you've got Detroit coming in, and then you go to Kansas City. You know, you do not want to be in a position where,
You're 1-2 heading to Kansas City.
yeah, I mean, you just don't.
Oof.
So, but you got to take care of, like, it's Cleveland. It's Cleveland all week. It's
Gotta be
Cleveland.
2-1 going to Kansas City now. You gotta win two in a row here.
Yeah, there's nothing
Now
you
that we're
can.
talking about it, I'm glad we're
Yeah.
talking about it.
And you've got to compartmentalize, right? This narrative, Sunday night was your chance to at least chip away at the narrative just a little bit, right? Again, it wasn't going to end it because September 7th is not the same as January 20th. It's just not. We all know that. Don't get caught up in the euphoria of what we thought the win was going to be, right? I mean, I think everyone was thinking that, and then you saw what happened. But man, it's just more baggage to carry with you. And I don't think it's, you know, I don't think this is going to cause them to spiral or anything like that, but you just, I don't trust them. I don't trust this football team in these
Dude,
biggest
if they go
moments.
3 and out on the first set of downs on Sunday, they'll get booed around here, which is just crazy. But I mean, the
You
fans are
know what? You're
pissed.
probably not wrong. I
I
mean,
mean, if fans are pissed. All
you
right,
know what?
Lucas here.
Let me just, this will be my last thing. I would say maybe not going 3 and out, but let's say they give up a touchdown on the opening drive. Like, say the defense does it. Boy, yeah. That'll be ugly because Lamar, Derrick Henry, the love will be there for those guys, as it should be. But that defense, PU at the end of the game, that was not remotely acceptable.
A lot of things are not remotely acceptable. Luke Jones is here. He covers the Baltimore Ravens as well as the Baltimore Orioles for us. You can follow him at Baltimore Luke. GBMC is presenting our hotline around here as well as some injury reports. We're very appreciative to them as well as our Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with Liberty Pure Solutions. We're going to be at the Beaumont in Catonsville next Tuesday. We're going to be joined by Councilman Pat Young. I love going to Catonsville. I love the Beaumont. My wife's mad that I didn't feature the lamb chops. I'm going to feature the lamb chops next week because I was remiss, as well as that corn dish, which is also delicious as well. There is a rumor, Luke Jones, that you almost attended a no-hitter on Saturday night at Camden Yards. Is that factual? Almost?
Almost,
What a
although
weekend it was. I mean, like, you and I have just done 3 hours of football, and are we going to talk baseball, you and I, or are you going to leave it to me and Alan?
we can talk
You were at
baseball
the
if you
game
want.
Saturday night, right?
I was there for all of it. I
All
thought I was
right.
seeing history in a different way, and then I don't want to say history, but my goodness, one of the all-time games that I have covered in my career, absolutely
I
with that
called it a
finish.
top five Camden Yards
Crazy.
game, and we haven't said a word about it, you and I. So you and I are going to do that as well. Alan and I have spoken a lot of words about that on Sunday morning. I am back and in the cockpit all week long here. I'll be writing a column Ness off of the mess. Ness and mess, it rhymes. Also, our friends at Curio Wellness have put me out for tastiness, winding it down. This is what happens, Luke. You and I get going. 54 minutes later, and half my peach cake is still here, and it's stone cold, and I'm going to have to go heat it up again. Make sure you're checking out Tastiness out there on behalf of our friends at Curio Wellness and all of our sponsors who have fed us so well in August that I might fast like Mahatma Gandhi in September. Stay with us. It's Baltimore Positive.